You're listening to Trucking Questions from the Audio Road with Kevin Rutherford. This is the show that puts the money where it belongs, back in your pocket. You can ask questions about trucks, money, fuel mileage, maintenance, tires, tax, technology, or anything else about the business of trucking. Here we go. Let's head on down the Audio Road.
Welcome to the program. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. The show is all about the business of trucking. We take your calls. We answer your questions about trucks, money, fuel mileage, maintenance, tires, taxes, technology, health and fitness on the road, getting started as an owner-operator, finding freight, working with brokers, you name it. We'll talk about it here on the air. We will talk about everything and anything trucking or anything else you want to bring to the table. And I tell you what, I think we're just going to jump right into the phone calls tonight. We're going to start off in Idaho. Faye, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kevin. How are you today?
Doing great. What can I help you with?
Good. My first question, I've got a couple, but my first one is about per diem in an S corp. I've heard, my background is in accounting, so I get the per diem thing as far as the sole proprietor, but we have an S corp and my husband driver is the sole owner of the S corp. What is the best way to handle the per diem for him?
You know, this is really kind of a strange issue because I've read through the IRS code and technically you can't use the per diem when you are more than a 2% owner of an S-Corp.
Okay.
But everybody does. And
Right. I mean, as an employee, but because as an employee, he would still be entitled to take the per diem on his 1040, right?
Correct, but then you lose the advantage. You know, the 2% floor.
The other, right.
Yeah, so we want to take it as the business. Now, and it gets weird, and I've asked other, you know, tax preparers this over the years, and everybody looks at me like I have three heads. They say,
right, well, I've heard you talk about it a dozen times, but not the S-Corp side, so.
Yeah, they, you know, when I go to other tax preparers and I say, look, right here in the code, you can't use it if you're an S-Corp. And they're like, yeah, but everybody always does, and we have for years, and we've been audited. Nobody ever says anything, so we just keep it simple. Now, you could, you know, get a little more complicated. You could have the S-Corp pay the per diem to him as a non-taxable pay. Now, then the S-Corp then can only deduct the 80%. They can't deduct 100% of what they pay. But that's one possibility. And then that also opens up the ability to still take your standard deduction.
Okay. All right. That makes sense. That was the other. Now, do we have to set up a qualified plan, or can we just put it on the W-2?
Yeah, technically, you don't even have to put it on the W-2, but I would put it there. And the IRS says as long as you meet the requirements, you have a qualified plan. You don't have to specifically set it up. And all they're really looking for is if you choose to do it, say, per mile. Let's say you decide, you know, we're going to keep it simple at the end of the week. He ran this many miles, we're just going to pay 10 cents a mile as per diem, or whatever number you pick.
Right.
The only thing that is required to make sure it stays a qualified plan is that you don't overpay what he would have been able to receive if you calculated by the day.
Okay. All right. Can I pay that to him as like a monthly payment? Just take the $59, 80% and pay it to him as a monthly payment?
Yes, you can do it that way, and then you always know you're going to be qualified then because you'll always be paying the correct amount.
Right. Okay, so next question is, I'm in the truck with him. I have not drawn a salary as of yet for 2015. Our plan was sort of to use me to bonus out at the end of the year or quarterly.
Okay.
Now, in order for me to take per diem, I would also have to be an employee. I would have to receive a W-2 from the S-Corp. I am not a shareholder.
You're not a shareholder.
I am not a shareholder. I would have to receive, in order to say that I am involved in the business of trucking, I would have to receive a W-2, correct?
Correct, because you're, if you were a shareholder, then it would be a no-brainer without being a shareholder. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's easy enough. I mean, it would be
I can bonus myself out at the end of the year and write me one check for, you know, whatever, instead of bonusing him out at the end of the year, just pay me a lump sum. So
That's now, the other thing, since we're talking about it and you'll have all this set up already, how are you guys handling health insurance?
Health insurance, the corporation is paying, but it will show up on the W-2. We're paying it directly through Blue Cross Blue Shield.
Okay, because...
Now, I'm actually writing the check, but I'm actually making the payment from the corporation. It's in his name.
So we need to make some adjustments to that. Let me tell you why.
Okay.
Even though the corporation pays it, because it's an S-Corp and he's the owner, it will still be treated as a personal expense.
Right,
and it's only
right.
deductible on the front of the 1040, which means you don't save any of the self-employment. You can do, and there's a specific plan name for this, you will get the health insurance on you, not on him. Because you're an employee, the health insurance will be in your name. Because you're an employee, the corporation can pay for all of the
100%.
Health insurance plus any other medical expenses you choose to have them pay. The corporation can pay it all. Now, you get the plan, but you put him on the plan as your spouse.
Okay, and it may actually be set up that way. I didn't intend to do it that way, but I think when I set up the payment, it came out in my name, so I may not actually have to adjust that. Good deal.
Then it's all deductible as a business expense.
Okay, perfect. Okay, see, I had that. I had on my financials, I've got the, quote, per diem expenses and the health insurance officer's health as separate line items in case I needed to move them to shareholder distribution at the end of the year, but I don't.
Okay. Nope.
Good deal. All right.
That'll work.
I also have... I have 3 oil samples, and I haven't sent them in, and it may be easier just for me to email them to you, and we can go over it at another time. But 2 of them are Delvac, and 1 of them is Dello, and the one that we just got that was Dello had lead at 10, and it flagged it as a 3. These are from Polaris. But the 2 of them... It's the one before that that was Delvac had lead at 23, and it was not flagged. It was at a 2.
I was really confused. Well, it can get confusing, and I'd have to look at the samples because it can come down to time and mileage and some other things. But send those over so we can take a look at them.
Okay. All right, I will send the oil samples. Okay, that's perfect. That's probably the easiest way to do it. Okay, well, that's all I needed, then. I'll send those over to you, and we'll go over them either tomorrow or next week.
Sounds great. Thanks for the call. Let's head off to Virginia. Jason, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kevin. How are you?
Great. What can I help you with today?
I have... 2 comments, one about Pittsburgh Power and one about Fleet Air Filter. But before I forget, on a previous show, you had Greg in Ohio with a Volvo that kept breaking brake chamber mounts on his drive axles, I believe.
Yeah.
Okay. I had the same issue on my Peterbilt, and it's due to axle flex. When I had 2-inch offset rims, I was breaking the mounts because the S-cam goes through it and it's all bolted up to the axle and everything, and the mount actually flexes, and there's an updated part that actually has a extra bracket on there to prevent the present the flex, but you need to find out what the updated part is. Nobody stocks the old part anymore.
Got it. Okay, that makes sense, because that's what he, you know, it's amazing to me that dealers can't keep up on this stuff, because all they told him was, this is, you know, the last one we have in stock and we can't get anymore. They never told him about the new upgraded part.
Yeah, it's just, there's even a bulletin on it. I believe all the manufacturers are having similar problems with their 40,000 pound axles and lighter. So they all went to a new version.
That makes sense. Hey, the music's playing. I know you've got some other things, so I'm going to get to a break and we'll come right back and get to that. So don't go away. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. We're going to get right back to the calls. Before the break, I was talking with Jason in Virginia. Jason, go ahead.
I've spent a lot of money this year trying to fix an ABS problem. My light has been on for a couple months. And last week I went into Pittsburgh Power, and within 45 minutes they had it fixed. The thing that they did different, they went and drove the truck with the computer plugged in. That was the only difference that the other shops didn't do. They would just plug it in and say, oh, well, you need a new ECM for your ABS system. And I wasn't ready to spend $800 on a new computer.
Right. Right.
So I spent quite a bit of money trying to chase down this problem and quite a bit of my own time trying to find corroded wires and things of that nature. But when I was there, I also had had my overhead done, and Pittsburgh Power, they pulled out my fleet air filter, and they're going to clean it for me. And they started pulling it apart, and it just fell right apart. I've had it for 5 years, and the wraps just disintegrated as they were starting to pull things apart. And fleet air filter, they gave me a new filter. They warrantied everything. They didn't just warranty the wraps. They warrantied the entire filter because I had one of the originals.
Nice. I love that. I love that. And again, you know, I'd love feedback, and we take all feedback, good or bad, but I'd love it when, you know, our partner companies come through like that, and they do. I mean, that's why we partner with them. You know, a couple things. When you talk about plugging in the computer and driving the truck, I've been through the troubleshooting manuals on almost every engine trying to figure out, you know, what is going wrong. Why can't these companies, the shops, figure out what's wrong with these newer trucks? And virtually every troubleshooting guide starts by plugging in the computer and taking the truck for a ride. That is like standard.
Right.
On all, and yet I stand around these shops and watch them go to work on a truck, and nobody's taking anything out for a drive. It's like the first step in every troubleshooting guide I've looked at. And I ask these shops, why don't you guys, well, we don't have time, it doesn't do any good. Yes, it does do good if you know how to do this. And you're right, Pittsburgh Power, they're constantly running trucks out of there with the computer hooked up and monitoring things while they're going down the road. You know, they've been around forever, and they have always been absolute top-notch on mechanical stuff. And now they are really cutting edge when it comes down to electrical problems, electrical engineering. They've got a whole department in there now, and you know, stuff like this, like you said, we have people that waste a lot of time and money with other shops trying to chase down electrical problems, which are complicated now. And they've built their own diagnostic equipment to find this stuff.
Yep, I have to watch them work, and they're fixing another electrical issue for me also. And then they were pretty thorough. It took them some time, but they got it done, and no more problems.
Outstanding. Great stuff. Well, thanks for the feedback.
No problem, anytime.
All right. Speaking of electrical issues, sounds like we have some more. We're going to head off to Illinois. Tim, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Kevin. I do have an electrical nightmare that I'm hoping maybe you might be able to help wake me up from.
Okay, let's
first,
give it a shot.
In the background, I have a 2007 Coronado. I installed fog lights on my truck. Aftermarket fog lights and ground wires I hooked to the frame. The power wires I hooked directly to the low beams. Now, the problem is I hit a deer. And when I hit the deer, it shredded my fog light and sent the metal casing into my bumper and shorted out. Now, what it shorted was my front right turn signal, but I have two right side turn signals on my truck, one on the side of the fender over the tire, and the one right next to the headlight, which is also the parking light. And after the short, the turn signal on the one in the front right of the truck no longer works. I tried replacing the bulb and running the wire, and I can't seem to get it figured out. When I wire the bulb assembly directly to the turn signal next to it, it works. However, when I set my brakes off, my two parking lights come on as daytime running lights, and the right one also does not work. But the running parking light works.
I'm familiar with these types of problems, but it's not something I can tell you how to fix over the phone. You know, lights used to be so simple. Lights were, you know, if you had a wire and you had power and a ground, the light would work. That's not the case anymore. With all the multiplexing going on and the more complicated electronics, now it's a matter of voltages and how many lights can be put on a circuit, and it can get fairly complicated. What seems like it should be really simple can get fairly complicated. You've added an aftermarket light, and I know they were working before, but that complicates the issue. If you go to any of the newer style headlights, the higher intensity, that changes things. This is another one of those issues where you need a relationship with a shop that will take some time and not kill you on the hourly charges to figure this out. Sometimes a guy will walk up there, figure it out in 5 or 10 minutes, go, oh, here, we just need to run this over here, we'll be done. Other times I've seen shops work on this stuff for 2 or 3 hours and then say, we don't know what's wrong. You know, again, this is one of those issues that I don't know where to send you. Because you could go into some shops and it's 10 minutes, and you could go into the same shop and it'll be 3 hours and they'll look at you and say they don't know what's wrong. Pittsburgh Power is the one place I know that always fixes these kind of issues.
Yeah, that's kind of my next stop is Pittsburgh Power. It's just not the easiest for me to get there and be able to take the downtime. But I do have a personal mechanic, Freightliners, and right now he's a service truck operator for Holt Caterpillar out of Waco, Texas, and he's the only one that really works on my truck and doesn't kill me on the hourly, and he's completely stumped by it, and especially considering the fog lights were hooked to the headlights, and it shorted out that one turn signal bulb only.
That's what I mean by I don't want to just send you to a shop, because you've got a good guy. You've got a relationship with him. He knows this stuff, and he's still stumped. Now, this isn't a criticism, but he's probably more of a general mechanic. He said he worked at Freightliner, where and I've talked about this before, they're trained on everything. You know, they'll go to a class for AC work. They'll go to a class for alignments. They'll go to classes for electrical work, and they'll do a little bit of each one here and there. And that's good most of the time. You get one of those weird problems, especially electrical. They're more complicated than most. And if you don't have that knowledge of testing circuits, knowing that there are some circuits in this truck now that a fluctuation of a half a volt will cause something to not function or to function incorrectly. And so, you know what, I was just talking about Pittsburgh Power, where for years and years and years they hired mechanics, and everything was mechanical, and they were very good at it. Now they hire electrical engineers, and that they have an entire electrical engineering department. So they're not taking a mechanic and sending him through a couple classes on electronics or electrical issues. They're taking electrical engineers and bringing them into the trucking side. And they have a whole department like that.
Okay.
You know, they hired guy who his background was he built circuit boards. Because we have so many circuit boards in the ECMs and all these computers now, and rather than buy brand new ECMs, they're actually going in and repairing ECMs at the circuit board level.
Yeah, I heard that on your show the other day when Bruce was on.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's the difference. You know, at typical garages, dealerships, you are getting mechanics who have been run through a short class on some of these other things. Pittsburgh Power is saying, look, this is all about electronics. Circuit boards, ECMs, computers, they're taking people with, you know, electrical engineering backgrounds and computer backgrounds, and they're having great success troubleshooting things that other shops just can't figure out. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rothbard. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. Hey, I want to remind you, CMC registration is open. We're talking about CMC 2016. Big changes this year. We have three different lanes. We have classes and education this year designed for everybody. Whether you're brand new in the industry and you want to learn more or become an owner-operator, we have a whole lane for you. We have a lane for owner-operators, primarily leased to a carrier, want to learn how to run more profitably. And we have a lane for carriers and single truck owner-operators with their own authority. We're working on things like compliance issues and working with brokers and negotiation and load boards, growing your fleet, legal issues. We are covering it all in 2016. Sign-ups have been going on for a couple weeks now, pretty strong, so you want to jump in on this. We have simplified the payment plan. Right now, we have a pre-sign-up, an early sign-up price of $1,400. That's for everybody, whether you pay cash or you're on the payment plan. The only difference this year is You need about $100 down to lock in your seat, and then you'll pay a small interest charge while you have a balance. Much more simplified this year. So I'm going to give you a couple ways to register. Grab something to write with. We are going to be in Council Bluffs, Iowa, May 16th through the 20th. It gives you about 11 months to get prepared. So if you don't know for sure if you can make it, but you've always wanted to come, lock in your seat. Commit to it now. You'll find the way to get there. You really need to be there. It's going to be an amazing year. We are taking over an entire convention center for the whole week. Lots of parking, lots of truck services available, lots of events going on. The website, if you want to register, letstruck.com. Look under the events tab. Or you can give us a call. We can answer any of your questions and get you registered. Get your seat locked in while you've got the chance now. 855-800-FUEL. 855-800-3835. Let's head off to North Dakota. Jonathan, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin, I have a question about my alternator. I have your scan gauge, and my question is, with my alternator, it's reading 14.5 on the voltage. And then when I run my truck all day and then I park at the end of the day, I like my batteries are, they, you know, like they're frying. I like it's a egg, you know, like a barrel egg.
Right.
So I want to know, I want to know, is it any kind of way I can turn the voltage down on alternator?
No, but there's a couple things we need to check. You need to get the batteries load tested and inspected. If the batteries have a bad cell or a couple bad cells, it can cause the alternator to overcharge like that, trying to keep up with it. And typically, once you feel those batteries getting hot or you can hear them kind of bubbling and boiling when you stop, that's not a good sign. So we need to troubleshoot the whole system before you buy anything. So just to make sure, you know, that I would have somebody with a multimeter that knows what they're doing test the alternator with no batteries on it so that we see cleanly what the voltage coming out of that alternator is with no draw on it. So we just want it to land somewhere between 13.8 and 14.2. Then we can load test the batteries themselves, and it could be bad batteries causing all the issues. But I would test those two things independently and then figure out what needs to be replaced. But if the alternator is overcharging, then you really just have to replace the alternator. I don't think that's what it's going to be, though. I think this may be a battery issue.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I just put three brand new batteries in there about 5 months ago. I just don't want to mess them up.
Three and not four? How come?
I have to start my drill.
Okay. All right. So yeah. That it, you know, it could be that you got a bad battery in the bunch, or it could be that the alternator is overcharging, and if that's the case, you're going to need an alternator. But again, I would test them independently, because I've seen people chase this over and over and over. They think the alternator's overcharging, so they put a new alternator on, then it continues, and then the batteries are fried, then they replace the batteries, then, you know, so we want to independently test each one of those to figure out where the problem is.
Okay. All right. All right. Thanks a lot, Kevin.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. Let's head off to Arizona. Adam, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. Good afternoon. Hey, did the guy that just called about the alternator problem, did you get what kind of truck it was, what year? I didn't hear.
He didn't, no. No,
because I just chased that problem for months and spent almost a couple thousand dollars, and it ended up being a 50-cent fuse.
Oh, yeah, that's crazy.
If you remember that one, I changed all four batteries, changed the alternator, and when they installed the alternator, they arced out a 20-amp fuse in it, right inside the mini fuse box underneath the hood, and that caused my alternator to be running at about 14.6 to 14.8 at all times.
Yeah, see, that's another one of those issues that, you know, like I was talking earlier, headlights, taillights, turn signals used to be real simple. Alternators and batteries used to be real simple. And now you've got to know every different model of truck because there never used to be any other fuse box somewhere that controlled any of this stuff. So it is,
yep.
And this is why Pittsburgh Power has electrical engineers instead of mechanics.
Well, somebody at a Freightliner dealership knew exactly what the problem was when I told him. He didn't even have to see the problem. He went straight to the fuse box, pulled out the fuse, and went, "There's your bad fuse." After I spent,
yep.
I don't know. Anyways, you know, $700 on batteries, $500
yeah.
bucks on, you know, alternators. But I'll just real quick, if he's having any other issues other than the 14.5, if he's having any other problems with the lights going on and off, or you know, blowing relays inside the cab. And when he turns the truck off and lights and stuff, that'll fix everything, if that's the problem, if it's a newer truck. But anyways,
got it.
Yeah, I hope I can save somebody from doing what I did after chasing it around from across the country. But if you can take a look at the fuel gauges Lisa sent over for you, everything's been going pretty good. I had the fast system issue, and their pump failed. They fixed it and got it back to me. I had it off for a couple weeks, and I ran for the regular OEM, and my fuel economy went up. And when I put the system back on this trip now, it's kind of gone down. Just to give you the 6.3 that I had on there, we had a little issue with, this is going to blow your mind, but the fill filter on the fast system, the people that installed it actually didn't tighten it enough, and when I was driving in Louisiana, I dropped anywhere from 12 to 15 gallons of fuel on the freeway.
Ouch. Well, that'll hurt fuel economy.
Yeah, it did. You can see it right there at the 6.3 mark.
So, when did the fast go back on? What was the date?
This trip, the date was whatever last Thursday was.
Let me look real quick, because I'm looking at each fuel up here to see if I can figure something out. So the 4th,
it would be the one right before the 6.32 would be the first one that I did with the system back on it.
Yeah, that would make sense, because that was a fuel up on the 5th. So 7.2, 6.3, we got to kind of throw that one out. Then we had a 7, then a 6.7, and now a 7.5.
And I was real light on the 7.5.
Yeah, so if we look at all of those fuel ups since it's been back on, except the 7.5, every one of them is below your average.
Right.
That's not a good sign. Wow. The only thing that comes to mind is, have you talked to anybody at Fast about what micron size filters you're putting on?
I have a Wix now, and it's they told me that the micron doesn't really matter, especially with the water separator. That one doesn't really matter at all, but the fill filter one does, and I believe I'm running the three micron or five micron with the Wix filter, because I chasing down the problem with the fuel, I went through, I don't know, four sets of fill filters with this thing, and I can never find the, you know, trying to get the fleet ones or the fast
yeah.
system ones was too much of a pain in the ass.
Okay, hold that thought. I'm going to come back right after the break. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. All right, real quick, we're heading into the 4th segment here on the first hour. So at the end of this segment, I'll say I'm done. Good night. I've got to get out of here. Don't hang up. We're going to come right back and do another hour. Here we go. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. We're down to the final segment. I'm going to get right back to some phone calls. We're off to Arizona. Adam, you still with me?
Yeah. And what I did was I just cross-referenced on their website, and their microns on the cross-reference, it varies from 2 micron up to, like, 10 for the filter.
Well, and yeah, and the thing is, I think that when we're seeing fuel mileage issues, that we go to the biggest micron size rated for that engine and see if that fixes the problem. And Fast says, or they say maybe it doesn't matter that much. I disagree. I think the micron size matters a lot. We've seen engines that there will be 3 different ratings that are all approved for that engine. You know, one large micron, one in the middle, one very small. And if you go with the very small micron rating, we've seen a loss of a couple tenths of a mile per gallon. It causes more fuel restriction. And have you got a EGT gauge on this truck?
No, I got the basic stuff.
How about the scan gauge? Do you have EGT on it?
This is one of the trucks that the scan gauge doesn't do well.
Doesn't work. So, because here's the thing, we can sometimes pick up on this with an EGT, and what we do is you get a nice heavy load, nice long hill, and we see, you know, foot right to the floor, stay right in the throttle, and see the highest EGT we can produce. And then we would, you know, temporarily disconnect the FAS if we think that's the issue, and we would try it again. And if we can get higher EGTs without it, then that's telling us we've got a fuel restriction somewhere. Now, the FAS should do the exact opposite. FAS should give us more fuel pressure, more fuel flow when we need it, but we're clearly seeing that something is going wrong with yours. It when it's off, the fuel mileage goes up. When it's on, it goes back down. I've never seen that happen unless there was a restriction. We had a case that took us quite a while to track down, but the problem was when they installed the system, they used all the fittings that worked. They all connected, but they had really small inside diameters on their fittings. So it looks okay. I mean, you look at it and you go, well, yeah, it's all installed right. But the inside diameter on the fittings was so small, we were restricting fuel flow.
I gotcha.
So, yeah, I know, it seems pretty clear. You had a fuel mileage. It was off or disconnected. Fuel mileage went up. We put it back on. It went back down. Even without being able to see the EGTs, that's pretty clear. I guess you could try disconnecting one more time, but I think I would try to find the largest micron size available for that engine, and let's see if that takes care of it.
All right, I'll give Fast a call here in a minute.
Okay, sounds good.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
All right, thanks for the call. Let's head off to Georgia. Daryl, welcome to the program.
How you doing, Kevin? Kevin, I have a recommendation. I remember you were talking about the CMC and recommendation. And this will be my third CMC. And looking at the lines that Dale cover when he doing the pre-checks, everyone, I just always knew that would be an awesome class for Dale to give. I would spend easily a day and a half just listening to Dale go over that and watching him go over that, going over hands-on with him. And knowing that you, on Fridays, you have the kind of the hands-on setting, but nothing like what Dale could possibly give. I think that's a diamond in the rough right there.
You know, I agree with you, and we are looking at, it's kind of a logistical issue. There's two things that people really love watching as far as hands-on. One is Jeff Zarley's overhead, and the other, you know, is Dale's pre-trip. Now, Dale does it, or a level one, he does it individually, you know, which is very, very time-consuming. It's part of the fuel mileage makeover now. And like you said, it is a great education. What we want to try to set up this year, and we have the opportunity now. See, before, we had to be careful putting too much time and effort into something that was going to happen outside, because you saw what almost happened this year with the weather. We almost got rained out. It was really close.
Right.
Now, though, we'll be inside. So what we're trying to work out, how do you set it up logistically? So maybe, you know, what is the number? Could Dale give that class for 10 people and they can all see everything and hear everything the right way? Or do we need to get some cameras on there so we can project it up on a screen?
Project it, right, right.
Yeah, so I think you're exactly right. That is a great class. We just have to figure out logistically how to make it work for everybody. The other one that's like that is kind of like Mike Beckett. You know, we sit through the seminar and he explains everything, but when you can go out and see it hands-on, it's really amazing. The problem is, while he's talking and doing it, only like 3 or 4 people can get right around him and see what's going on.
Right.
So all of those hands-on, we love those, and so do all the people coming. We have to figure out, I want to make it a really smooth process so everybody can see and hear and get a lot of benefit out of it.
Kevin, there's two other diamonds I want to talk about, and that's Lisa and Kim. There's and Kevin, I listened to you from Wednesday to Sunday, so every day I don't miss any of it. Sometimes I cringe, but it always makes me think. And
good.
And you were at one point really, really going towards a natural health and accountable way from Western medicine. And there's a course in the greater course that's the science of natural healing.
Okay.
That's a really awesome course. But where I was going with this was Lisa and Kim, there's another book called Blue Zone and Blue Zone Solution. And I just imagine them setting that up, because it's definitely the direction you want to go. Maybe not necessarily the diet or the way of life or the direction you're going, but I'm sure those two can really set up a blue zone in the trucking industry, and that is the direction that you're pushing. Those are two books, where the Blue Zone and the Blue Zone Solution would be two really, really good books to investigate.
I am going to check both of those out, and you're right. If anybody can do it, those two can put it together. You know, what works really well around here, and one of the things that we've done as a company, and I continue to learn more about and do, is, you know, we use things like the standout assessment to identify what people's strengths are, and then we try to put people in positions where they can use their strengths, and then we tend to kind of set them loose. I don't micromanage.
Right.
I don't believe in micromanaging. I think people need freedom to do their own thing. And, you know, one of the things we found is that my strength, obviously, too, I have, that I've identified and worked on over the years. One is research. I'm really good at digging into a lot of reading and a lot of research and boiling it down to what really works. And then second, I'm usually pretty good at convincing other people that I have done the work. Here's the research. Here's the conclusion. But then where I would fall down every time is on the execution of some of these things. You know, I don't do well when it comes to that, being really organized and setting up systems and making sure it all gets done. But if I go do the research, bring all this together, those two, you're right, could create an amazing thing for the industry.
Right. Like I say, I haven't called in probably about a year and a half, but I listen every time you're on, and it just makes
me
think.
Well, I appreciate it, and I've got these. I wrote these down: The Science of Natural Healing, Blue Zone, and Blue Zone Solution. And when I am done today, this is the first thing on my list to go check these out.
Okay. All right, Kevin. Thank you.
I appreciate it. Thanks for the call. I love those kind of recommendations. Now, I've got my book list right now is insane, and I'm still reading three or four at the same time, which I'm not sure is a good thing yet or not, but I'm always looking for more recommendations, so I appreciate that. Those sound like good ones. There's the music. That means I'm all out of time. I've got to get out of here. I'll see you back here next time. Be safe. Be profitable. Do the hard work and master the journey. Good night, everyone. I'm Kevin Rothsberg.
Your taxes, your truck, and your road to success in the trucking industry.
This is Trucking Business
and Beyond, the show that puts the money where it belongs, back in your pocket.
Welcome to the program. I'm your host, Kevin Rothsberg. Website is letstruck.com. The show is all about the business of trucking. If you've got questions about trucks, money, fuel mileage, maintenance, tires, taxes, technology, health and fitness on the road, working with brokers, getting your own authority, becoming an owner-operator, you name it, we'll tackle it here on the air. All you have to do is pick up the phone and give me a call. I'm going to get to those calls in just a little bit. You know, wrapping up the last show, we got talking a little bit about the direction that I've been taking on the health and fitness side. And this, by far, has become the most controversial subject I talk about on the air. Who would have thought that something that applies to every single person listening, even if you weren't in trucking, health and fitness applies to us all. Who would have thought that that would become the most controversial subject on the show? And when I say controversial, I mean that I get feedback from both sides, people who hate when I talk about health and fitness, even if I totally address it from a trucking lifestyle standpoint. They don't care. They don't want to hear it. They swear if I talk about it one more time, they're going to stop listening to the show. And then on the other hand, I get people who just say they absolutely love it. They want me to do more. They know they need more. The industry needs more. And there are very few people in between. Nobody really seems to say, well, yeah, it's okay. I can take it or leave it. I'm sure there are people out there like that. But I get the feedback from people who are on absolute opposite sides. I have decided that it's kind of like politics. You know, there was a time when every time I would talk about politics, I would get that same kind of response, people who loved it and people who hated it. And I said then, when we went through that there will be times when I take some of this show and I talk about politics when I think it has a direct impact on what we do in trucking and what we do primarily as business owners and owner-operators. Because that's still, I know I have a lot of drivers who listen. Focus is really on the business side, the owner-operator side. I help a lot of drivers with tax issues and financial planning, and I love doing that. I also help a lot of drivers become owner-operators, and I really love that. That's my focus, on the business side. So if I think that politics, a specific issue has an impact, then I'm going to talk about it. This show is called Trucking Business and Beyond for a reason. My vision was always that we would talk about everything that could have an impact on your career in trucking and your business in trucking. Health is the same thing. I will take time on the show to talk about health issues that I think can help people in the industry. And I honestly, the more I read, the more I research, the more I talk to people about this, I can't think of a single issue that impacts more people directly than health. There is not one issue that crosses all the boundaries, all the lines, and affects every single one of us more than health does. So why wouldn't we talk about health and fitness and how to be healthier and more fit? And then all you have to do is look around at society and see all the problems. Then all you have to do is really look around at our industry and see all the problems. Obesity, high blood pressure, diabetes, people losing their CDL because of health issues. Now we have to worry about sleep apnea. Don't even get me started on that. The issue that I see that I would like to help people with is our medical community is not designed to make you healthier. Our medical community is designed to make money, lots of money. That's what the whole sleep apnea issue is all about. Now, look, I'm not saying there aren't people with sleep apnea, and I'm not saying some people could be helped by a CPAP machine. But I can also tell you that that is not a natural state that your body needs a machine to sleep at night. Almost all of our diseases, almost all of them, well over 90%, are lifestyle related. Now you can say, well, I need this drug or I need this machine or I need this device because I have this condition. Yes, you do, but that condition can be fixed. I don't care what the medical community says. Diabetes, type 2 diabetes is curable. There are lots of diseases that they absolutely told us you can't cure, can't be done. They are wrong. And I don't know whether they're just wrong because they don't know, they're wrong because they're lying, it's a conspiracy, I don't care. I just know that they're wrong. We can fix so much more of our health problems, mostly with diet. I'm not even talking about a whole lot of exercise, a little bit, just some activity, but primarily diet. And it's not as complicated everybody has made it out to be. It really comes down to getting back to the foods that our bodies were designed to eat. That's not hard to figure out. Go back and look at what we ate before agriculture, before civilization. We didn't eat processed foods. We didn't eat a lot of sugar, and we didn't eat grains of any kind. It's not that complicated. We will talk about it more. I certainly take questions. I am sort of in talks with Sirius to possibly get another hour for a new show. I don't even want to call it my show because if I'm able to get an hour, we would focus solely on health and health-related questions. So I know people would try to call up and ask me rolling resistance and fuel mileage. We just won't do it. If I am able to get another hour, we will make it health and fitness related, and all of the talk and all of the conversation will be about that. I don't know whether I'll be able to get that or not. I'm working on it. I will take some time out of this show occasionally to talk about the things I'm learning and to help questions. So if you have any questions about health, fitness, lifestyle, diet, food, what you should be eating, what you shouldn't be eating, ask me. I've done a tremendous amount of research on that in the last 6 to 8 months. I've done a lot of research on it in the last 30 years. But really some intensive research in the last 6 to 8 months. Let's get to a phone call before we've got to get to a break. Let's head off to Louisiana. Bill, welcome to the program.
Hello, Kevin. Say, I'm looking at a 97 Volvo WIA. It's been setting for about 6 years. Would it be good to go ahead and do a oil analysis on that?
Yes, if the oil wasn't changed before it was parked.
Now, yeah, it wasn't. So.
Okay. We'll have to look at some things differently. Oxidation will probably be off the charts because the oil has been oxidizing the whole time it's been sitting there. There are some other things that we'll look at a little differently, but things like fuel dilution could tell us something, soot buildup, wear metals, those kind of things. Will the truck start the way it is?
No, I didn't have any batteries in it, but he said it was running fine when he parked it, so
well, if
I'm
you,
assuming it will.
If we were, in order to get a good oil sample, you're going to have to start it up. So we need to get that oil up to temperature. Otherwise, there's just no way, if it's been sitting that long, to get a good sample. We can't use a vampire tube because we'll only get off the top and everything settled down to the bottom. We can't pull the plug because we'll get all the junk at the bottom. So really what we need to do is get that engine running, bring it up to operating temperature, and then take the sample.
Okay. I never thought about that, but okay, thank you. My other question would be on the it has a 10 speed in it. I've heard of some of these transmissions you can switch to a 13 speed. How would I find out if this is one of those?
You know, there are so many transmission models, it's hard to keep them all straight, but I don't know if any of the 10 speeds are convertible. There are usually 9 speeds that are convertible to 13.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it has 370 gears in it, so I was hoping I could get it to a 13 to give me better mileage. But
well, you know, with 370s, the 13 speed wouldn't really matter much. With 370s, that 10 speed should work just fine. I could be wrong. Like I say, the transmissions are hard to keep track of, but I think it's all the 9 speeds that are convertible. I've got to get to a break. We'll be right back. Stick around. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. I'm going to get right back to the phone calls. Let's head off to Springfield. Carl, welcome to the program.
How are you doing, Kevin?
Doing good. What's on your mind today?
Well, I've got some issues with a couple of steer tires, and I can't remember what was talked about. I've got some wear. The one on the driver's side is wearing on the inside, and the passenger side's wearing on the outside.
Okay.
What could that possibly be?
Well, it can be a couple things, so let's go over some of the options and some of the ways we could narrow that down. One of the things you might want to consider getting, and everybody should consider getting these, really, Mike Beckett has 2 books on alignment and tire wear, and they are written for the average person. They're not, you know, technical mumbo jumbo. They are really, really well written, great books. It takes all the mystery out of tire wear and alignment. You read these things, and you're like, wow, this makes sense, and this is pretty simple. I like those books so much, we made them available in our store. So you can go online to letstruck.com/store and get the books. They're not very expensive either. I keep them right next to my desk for a reference for this kind of stuff. But honestly, after you've read them a couple times, you've worked with these things, it does start to get fairly simple. Now, front tire wear, there are only really a couple possibilities. Alignment, obviously, can cause tire wear on the front. Out of round condition or out of balance condition. Now, normally, we can look at the tire, check out a couple things, and pinpoint what the problem is going to be. So, outside wear, primarily going to be caused by alignment. Inside wear could be alignment, could be wheel bearing adjustment. One of the quickest ways to tell is where the wear pattern is occurring. If you take your fingers and you feel that wear from the outside in and then the inside out, so like you push your hand across it, pull it back, we're looking for what's called feathered wear. So you identify feathered wear because in one direction it feels smooth. When you're moving your fingers in the other direction, it'll catch. You'll feel edges. And that's feathered wear. If it's feathered wear, it's almost always an alignment issue. And then you can even tell which way the feathering is occurring, what is out of alignment in which direction. And the book explains all this thing right down to the detail, shows you exactly how to do it. If that wear pattern is smooth and not feathered, then it's more likely wheel bearing adjustment. And then after we do the visual inspection of the tires, we go verify those things mechanically. So if we think that it's wheel bearing, well, you jack the wheel up and check for wheel bearing play. If it's wheel bearing play, we just adjust the wheel bearing. If it's not, and we've got feathered wear, then we just measure the alignment and see what's out.
Okay. All right. Well, it's going in the shop today, so I'll have them check both of those.
Really, now, what kind of shop?
It's a tire shop that has alignment. It's not. They specialize in alignments, and I've been using them for years. And but it's not a
MD
dealer or Petro or something like that. You know.
Okay. And if you've been using them and you have good results, then that's good. There are thousands and thousands of alignment shops who, after hearing my explanation just now, they would say, why bother with all that? We just put it on the alignment rack and the computer tells us what to do. That's the problem. Because the computer, there are 100 reasons why that alignment rack and the computer can be wrong. And Mike Beckett goes through all those too, and why it still takes a technician, a mechanic, somebody who understands the physical reasons why this happens, check it out visually, you verify it with an alignment measurement. Because alignment, you know, when Mike Beckett, one of the things he does at CMC, he does an alignment with duct tape, string, and a tape measure. That's it. That's the only equipment you need to get an alignment right. We don't need these big, fancy computerized racks and all that stuff. In fact, that's part of the problem. Those things get out of adjustment. People don't know how to use them right. They're not trained properly. Nothing's calibrated the way it should be. So, but if you've got a shop and they've done a good job for you.
Does he explain that in his books with the tape and stuff?
Yeah, it does.
I know I was at the CMC a couple years ago. I was at a CMC a couple of years ago in Kansas City, and I saw him doing that, and also saw that rollout or radial rollout?
Yeah, radial runout, right.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay, well, I'll get those books and look over them and see what else I can do. And I'm definitely going to have them. I mean, I'm going to stand here and watch them, make them pull the wheels off and adjust the bearings, whether they're already adjusted or not, put the right stuff on them, make sure that they're tightened the way they're supposed to, and then have them align it. And each one of the two is probably the problem. But anyway, okay, thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. And it could be both. We see that all the time. You've got a truck with a wheel bearing out of adjustment and an alignment out of adjustment. You might have both going on. The book does a great job of explaining wheel bearing adjustment, doing measuring the alignment, the causes for tire wear, how to read tire wear. Really, really great books. And again, you can get those in our store. It's letstruck.com/store. Let's head off to Baton Rouge. Michael, welcome to the program.
Hey, thank you very much. Quick question, and I'd like to make a comment if I could. The Flobo, how does that work with a forward lift axle? Is it compatible?
It is. We were very, very happy that, you know, like I say, we started to talk to them a couple years ago. And one of the first, well, we told them a couple issues. We said, one, your system's going to have to work with wide singles, your wheel covers. And it's going to have to work with a lift axle because we highly promote both of those things. And we have a lot of listeners that use both. So when you are ordering, you can specify those things and the system will work, yes.
Oh, perfect, perfect. I'd like to make a little suggestion if you could, if I could. There's a app. It's not that old. It's out by ComData. ComData puts out an app. It's called ComData Fleet Advance. You can download it at the iTunes, whatever. It's real simple for fuel pricing. It's amazing. When you download it, you don't have to be a ComData customer. You can download it, and immediately you go in and you change the prompts in there. You change the defaults from gas station to truck stop and to diesel only. And it gives you a Google map. You just hover over your route, and it will see every time down a diesel stop is going to pop up a little flag. It's going to be an orange flag. The one with the cheapest price in that area is going to be green. So you could just hover on it for 600-800 miles, find the cheapest fuel, touch the flag, up pops the name, address, and telephone number of that diesel stop. You could call them and verify the price, and you can go, I've got my fuel average right now is like 32 cents a mile, and it's just crazy good. And it doesn't cost anything. It's free. So
outstanding. One quick question, and this wouldn't mean I wouldn't use the app, but it would be very cool if it would also do the price without the tax in there. Is that one of the options?
No, this is a pump price. So I mean,
okay.
if you knew the tax for that state, I mean, you could do the math.
Yeah, and that's why I say that. You know, I always have a chart with me that lists all this, so you could just do the math real quick in your head, so that wouldn't be a big deal.
Yeah, it's a free app, and it's so easy. You know, sometimes I have my nephew riding with me, and he's half retarded, and now he can do it, so I let him do it.
Excellent.
Look, anyway, one comment I'd like to make to you, Kevin. Look, I don't know what kind of impact you're having on people with this health thing that you're going through. I think it's wonderful. Look, don't listen to the crap people are telling you. You know what's good, and don't listen to them, and don't be discouraged by their nonsense. That's why they are the way they are. You know, Andrew Breitbart used to always say, you know you're over the target when you hear them screaming and hollering. You know, so those people that are screaming and hollering, look, man, that's the ones who need the help, and they're the most hard-headed about it. But I can tell you, my wife calls me a clone. She thinks I'm a clone. So, Kevin Rutherford, I've done everything that you could possibly do to this truck, and I brought this truck right here from 5.7 miles a gallon. My 60-day average right now is 8.01.
Outstanding. That is fantastic. Hey, the music's playing. They're rushing me into a break here. I love that kind of feedback. Thank you. We'll be right back. Stick around. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Thank you. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. You know, I want to address that last call about the health. And I've talked about it, and it is hard. I have some loyal listeners. Look, I learned to ignore the haters a long time ago. That does not bother me at all. The stuff I see online, the haters, I've been dealing with that for years. I get a kick out of that. But with the health thing, I will say that I have had some very, very loyal listeners who have threatened to just stop listening if I keep talking about health. That gives me pause. That makes me stop and think. And I've had to think long and hard about this, but I have. And health is so critically important. And the caller said, you know, I have to realize the impact I have on people, and I do, and I take that extremely seriously. I think about what I'm going to say to people, what answer I'm going to give them, what I'm going to talk about, what I'm going to research, and I take that as a responsibility. People do listen, and I take that responsibility seriously, and it's not always simple. And the health issue has been the hardest for me to decide. But I have decided that I will take some of this time, and if I can get another show, then that would be even better. And we have the podcast. We are going to be doing more in the health arena, and some of it is going to be on this show. He talked about taking a truck from 5-something to 8-something. I absolutely love that. That in and of itself can be life-changing to people. Their business changes, their money changes, because they're, you know, better off financially, their relationships are better, they're able to help other people. That is an amazing thing. Why wouldn't we want to do that with our health? Why wouldn't we want to make people healthier and fitter and more efficient? And again, I think it's my responsibility to use my strengths and help people with that. My strengths are in research. Taking something that seems complicated, and is, and doing enough research and enough reading to bring it down and simplify it so that we can apply it to what we do every day, and then influencing people to try those things. And then most people, once they try it, they see the results, then they're usually off and running. And that's what I do. And I honestly feel like I have a responsibility to do that. And I'm going to. So we will be talking more about health. And I do appreciate the feedback from the people who want to hear it. Let's go to Georgia. Steve, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin, I just want to give you a quick update on me. I was the one that called in going through the lease program, a terrible lease program, and I won't say the name of the company that I come out of. And I just want to give you an update that I paid my truck off, and I came over to Landstar, and I'm loving Landstar. I netted more money in 2 loads than what I did, what I would have worked all week long working with the other company. And I just wanted to give you an update, let you know that I appreciate you. I appreciate the profit gauges, because I tell you, I would have never been able to get through none of this without the profit gauge. Let me know my numbers. And I just wanted to give you an update about what's going on with me. And thank you so much.
Well, thank you for the feedback. I absolutely love stories like that. You know, that's why makes it worth getting up every day and doing the research and doing what we do here. I love doing it anyway, but I really love it when I hear stories like that where people took, and here's the thing, I just stand here on the radio and give people ideas. Lots of people listen to those ideas and do nothing with them. I love hearing from the people who did the hard work. It's one thing to sit and listen and go, oh yeah, that sounds like a great idea. It's another to go out and actually put it into use and take the risk and do the hard work. And you did that and you see the payoff, and I love that.
Yes, sir. And I do appreciate it. And I'll let you get on with another call. I just wanted to give you that update.
Thank you. So glad you're enjoying it over there. You know, I've said over the years, there are very, very few carriers that I have ever worked with. across the years, in all the projects we've done, the radio shows, the websites, the seminars, all kinds of different projects, I'm thinking that I have probably only partnered with 5 carriers or less in all that time on all the projects. Landstar being the longest running. I've been working with Landstar on different projects since the early 90s, and it's always been a great relationship for us. Mercer's another one. And a small company that not very many people are even aware of, a small Canadian carrier called Trafix. And the CEO of Trafix, I just absolutely love the guy. He's amazing. He is one of our speakers now at the CMC, and he gets it. And that's why we partner with them. Those are the only 3 carriers we partner with right now. And, you know, I did some work with Fikes over the years, and I'm trying to think. I said 5 because there's got to be one more in there somewhere, but nobody's really coming to mind. We don't partner with a lot of carriers. That's our choice. We could make an absolute fortune. Carriers have huge, huge recruiting budgets. We get tempted all the time with big checks to partner with carriers, and we just won't do it. There are a couple, like I just mentioned, a couple really special relationships that we have, and Landstar is one of them, and I get feedback like this about Landstar all the time. So, Steve, glad you're doing well over there and you love it. To Illinois, David, welcome to the program.
Hello, Kevin. I wanted to give you a little bit of an update, and then I also have a question and a comment. I'm the individual that has the black and orange W9 with the custom box, homemade lift axle, and I questioned you at Matt's about whether I should jump into an FLD that I had purchased and start all over again, but it might create a divorce, and you said maybe I should stay where I'm at. Well, I didn't take your advice.
Okay.
And my wife is over here slapping me right now. We ended up putting the FLD on with a second carrier so that we can do 2 different things depending on how long we want to be out, different things like that. So far, it has proven my point, or proven what you've always said, that anything with aerodynamics will always, across the board, get more than a square foot. And that's shown up right from the beginning. We've only got about 12 to 15,000, so we don't really have a record of anything yet, but we're tracking it on fuel gauges. But it is showing that there's a lot of improvement to be made. I've done nothing to this truck except put steer tires all the way around because it had junk recaps on it. I'm preparing to put a pass on, and the first thing that became real evident, and I have to ask you and other people at Detroit's, this truck has number 8 fuel lines in all positions, and I've never had a truck that had anything but number 10 fuel lines. So in preparing to put the pass on, would I not be better to change all the fittings and such and put number 10 in place of all the 8s? Or would I be creating maybe an issue that I'm not thinking of? I don't know what's normal on a Detroit, whether they should have number 8 lines.
What year is this?
It's a 2000 FLD with the 500 Detroit.
Okay, so that should be a DDEF. You know, I would ask that question specifically. I don't think you need to change anything. I don't think it's going to make a difference, but that's one of those issues that, you know, FAST stays up on specifically, so I would ask them directly.
Okay, I mean, you know, I'm a simplistic thinker, and my mindset is bigger would be less restriction, period. Just it would be an easier flow, sort of like the situation of using 45 in any place that you can instead of a 90. Am I thinking wrong?
Somewhat, and let me explain why, because there's always a limit to that. And here's the reason why there's always a limit. Yes, when you go to a bigger hose, pipe, whatever, we can talk about exhaust or whatever it is, when you go to bigger, you can reduce restriction until you get to a certain size and now you actually start to increase restriction. And here's why. The bigger the hose, the more volume of fuel is going to be in there, and the more volume of fuel you have, the harder it is to move that amount of fuel. So now it requires a bigger pump. So most of these systems are designed for a certain size. Sometimes we can go a little bigger and improve things. Sometimes we can go too far and actually make them worse. So I hear the music playing. I'm going to get to a break. I'll come back, and I'll give you another example of that when we get back. Stick around. I'm Kevin Rothberg. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. We're down to the final segment. I'm going to get right back to the calls. I was talking with David in Illinois. David, here's another example of this. We played around with exhaust back pressure and did a bunch of testing, and as we started to use bigger and bigger exhaust pipe, restrictions started to reduce, and then all of a sudden it got worse. And when you get to too big of an exhaust pipe, now there's so much volume of air, it takes more force to move that volume of air. So the same thing could happen with fuel. Again, that's why I think that would be a great question for FAST while you're doing the install.
Okay, great. And real quick, one comment I had was that anybody looking into going into the solar panel market, do some research. Don't just call. I was very impressed with the eNow display at MATS and thought, all right, we're really going in the right direction. Only to find out I was just talking with engineering-type minds that all they want to do is sell you a specific package that they put together. If you approach them from the other direction like I did, you know, I've got certain areas that I want to cover with solar panels. What do you have to offer? We kept butting heads, and I finally told them to forget it. I can buy products cheaper, because all I wanted to do was cover every square inch I could on this FLD. For example, on the hood, I have 200-watt panels. They said it would not be effective to put anything on the hood because of the underhood heat. I'm still getting 9 amps of charge in the middle of the day off those panels. Maybe they're not as efficient as what eNow would like to have, but 9 amps is still better than no amps. So I just want to throw that comment out to that. Anybody that's wanting solar charging capabilities, do some research, because you can buy products and controllers a lot cheaper than buying a prepackaged hype. You know, I call that an advertising hype. They have good products, but all the advertising that they're putting into it requires them to upcharge, and I'm not interested in paying for their advertising.
Yeah, you know, there's a couple good points you bring up here. One is that as much as we don't want to pay for somebody's advertising, you almost have to. They've got a product, but, you know, that old saying, build a better mousetrap and the world will beat a path to your door, is absolutely false. There are some fantastic products that companies go bankrupt because they weren't able to market it well. You've got to get the word out to people that the product even exists. And in today's world, we are so bombarded with stuff that it's very easy to miss something. So marketing, if you're going to get a product out, you've got to market it. There's just no way around that. The other issue, though, is they are selling the value of the package. They've done all the work. This panel with this controller, with this setup, with this wiring, done. It's off the shelf. It's plug and play. That's what some people want, and that's what some people need. And this could go for just about anything. If you are able to fabricate and learn and put things together on your own, you can almost always do it cheaper, and you can customize it a little more. When we talk about people who have designed their own APU systems with a generator and a rooftop air conditioner and all these little bits and pieces that they put together themselves, and many times they're able to come up with a better product at a lower price. That idea, try to put it together, sell it at a profit, and watch what happens. The cost goes through the roof. You have to market it. You have to sell it. You have to service it. It's not to say one way is right or wrong. It's just different options. But you are correct. Solar is the same way. If you have the ability to go out and figure this stuff out, get your own panels, put together a system, you can customize it more for less money. Not everybody is able to do that or wants to do it. Let's go to North Carolina. Zach, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kevin. How are you?
Doing great. What can I help you with today?
Well, before I ask my question, I just want to agree with a caller a while back about the health thing. Because if you are not alive and able to be out here doing the hard work, what's the point in being out here? So I 100% agree with how you're doing the health thing. And I love every time you talk about it.
Well, thank you. And I that was kind of what finally convinced me, was that everything else we talk about, whether it's business, your money, your relationships, all of those things, none of them matter without your health. I mean, you can have all the money in the world. Without your health, it doesn't matter. And you don't have to die. I mean, that's the ultimate failure. But just if you're sick, I mean, honestly, if I get up and I don't feel good that day, well, nothing else seems very important. Relationships are harder to maintain if you're not feeling good. You don't want to work on things if you're not feeling good. So it really is the one factor that crosses all lines and all borders. It affects every one of us.
It certainly does. But my question today, my mom, she did a lease purchase. And she did well, she made money, and she's getting ready to pay the truck off. When she does that, she wanted to move her truck to Landstar, and her and I operated as a team for a while, because she's planning on retiring in about 5 years, and then she was going to turn the whole thing over to me. And I was just wondering, when we go in to do that, because I tried to call into the Trucking with Authority show yesterday, and I didn't make it on the air to ask them about getting the authority and all that stuff. But I plan on calling next week for that. But I was wondering, when we do that and go into a partnership, we should do an escort, correct?
Yes, you should. You could do a partnership, but there are more. Now, a partnership is easier and less expensive. But there are also more risks to a partnership, and there aren't really any tax benefits in a partnership. A partnership is really just a sole proprietor with multiple people, so it adds more complication than a sole proprietor, but there really aren't any benefits. There are no tax benefits. So what you really want to form is an LLC, and then have it taxed as an S corporation.
Okay. All right. I just wanted to be sure. When we do this, since in a couple years it's just, you know, going to be me there and she's going to be retired, should we put both names on there? Or do it just in my name? Does it make a difference, really? Because I kind of wanted to do it first, because I know somebody was telling me, with her being female, it's like you get minority benefits or something, tax-wise?
No, there are no tax benefits. So people get a lot of this stuff confused. There are no tax benefits to being a woman or a minority. We're all basically taxed the same, other than income. I mean, nobody at the IRS knows, you know, it just doesn't matter what your race, your ethnicity, your sex, none of that stuff changes taxes. What people are getting confused about are there are sometimes grant programs and loan programs that are targeted towards minority-owned businesses. And females do count. But I can tell you this, in 30 years of being in this industry and in 20-plus years of working directly with people on their business, with their accounting and their taxes, I do not know a single case where anybody has gotten one of those loans.
Okay, yeah, because that's when we go over to Landstar, I'm hoping by this time next year to add a second truck. So she would be in one, I'd be in one. And I want to be able to just go and pay cash because she's got a 2010 Cascadia. And, you know, I live and die by what you say with the fuel mileage and emissions and all that stuff. So I'm trying to find something older that I can go and pay, you know, $10,000 to $20,000 cash for it and just be done with. So I don't have all that emissions stuff.
So the way I understand this, she does not have ownership of her truck yet, but that's coming up soon, right?
Right. She went through one of those big companies out of Missouri, and she did the lease, and then she got to the point to where they get an end-of-lease bonus, and she put that as a down payment to purchase the truck.
Okay. So but she has not,
she
the title
it,
has no, not been transferred
not yet.
Yet, right?
Okay.
So here's what I would do. I would sit down. Now, I really recommend paying an attorney to do this. There are other ways. You can go to LegalZoom and set up LLCs. But I think it's worth it to pay an attorney a little bit of money to get this done right, set up the LLC, have it taxed as an S-Corp, and then put the truck in the corporate name. And then you two, as owners of the corporation, both have ownership rights. Any equipment you buy after that point would also be put in the corporate name. Now, you're going to have to sign any loans or anything like that personally, but the equipment will be in the corporate name. I'm all out of time. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you back here next time. Be safe. Be profitable. Do the hard work. And master the journey. Good night, everyone. I'm Kevin Rutherford.
Thanks for tuning in to The Audio Road. If you have any questions, give us a call at 855-800-FUEL. That's 855-800-3835. Check out the website at letstruck.com and find us on facebook.com/letstruck.